Hello and welcome back to the Gateway House podcast. My name is Vipratap Vikram Singh. I'm a website manager here at Gateway House. Today, we're going to be continuing our special series on the US elections with Ambassador Neelam Deo. Today, we will be continuing our discussion on the US elections by examining the US-China bilateral and what it might mean for India. Thank you for joining us today, Neelam. In the previous episode, we were discussing the India-US relation and how they often have to be viewed in context to other nations in this region. The US-China relation has definitely been changing, and this is very clear in this election. Gateway House recently published a breakdown of the party policies that both the Republican and the Democratic parties have put out. And it was notable that both sides agreed that there was a need to make China play by the rules. Both candidates have also made strong statements on China. So, Neelam, to just start off, how credible is this rhetoric? Is it just, you know, election talk, or do you feel like there's something that a definite change in policy might come from this?
So I think at the outset, we have to recognize that China and the United States work together on a lot of things, particularly where the UN Security Council comes in. So China cooperated with the Americans on the Iran nuclear deal. China is a member of the group with Pakistan and the United States, which discusses Afghanistan. China cooperates with the U.S. on nuclear issues, much like the Soviet Union and the United States earlier. But since the Western powers, misused the UN Security Council resolution on Libya to actually carry out regime change, China has begun to defy the Western consensus. And we saw that in, for example, the question of Russian actions in Ukraine. China has been less cooperative on Syria. And of course, the South China Sea, which is really become the current locus of competition and rivalries and confrontation between the U.S. and China. It is limited as yet because China's territorial ambitions are limited to Asia. But to come to the election, of course, China is a perennial. China bashing was part of the campaign in the Obama elections. Before that, when Clinton was elected, when Bush was elected, and each candidate vies with each other to critique China, and on the other hand, to love Israel more than anybody else. But there are real issues. And those real issues are now things like espionage, cybersecurity, South China Sea. And on these issues, we really, to get an understanding, we need to have a sort of breakdown. The first issue, of course, is the trade deficit. There is a trade deficit of more than $300 billion annually, to the advantage of China. But this issue, along with allegations of currency manipulation, are dealt with in the annual economic and strategic dialogue that the US and China have. The same applies to allegations of IPR theft, which are also dealt with in the same institutional mechanism. On cybersecurity issues, they have a joint group to address that issue because, of course, both sides are undertaking cyber spying and cyber activities against each other. So these are perennial issues. They get a heightened profile during the election campaign, but it would be surprising if there was any major change immediately after a new president comes in the United States. There is Mao actually among analysts and strategic thinkers more concerned regarding Chinese weaknesses showing up, the reduced rate of growth, which is which is strengthening the recessionary trends globally and particularly in the West, in Europe, in Latin America. There's more concern attached to those than to a strengthened and strong economic competitor. So we should understand these issues as being campaign rhetoric, but they will have consequences, as you know, when we go on to discuss the trade agreements, the mega trade agreements.
Right, as you rightfully said, one of the biggest problems that the US has been facing is this massive debt that they have with China, and one of the efforts that the Obama administration was driving was the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or the TPP, a partnership which has been vehemently opposed by both candidates. The TPP was sort of brought about in a means to sort of counter China's economic influence in the Pacific region. Any new US president could definitely see the TPP getting shelved. But how might that impact the US-China battle for influence in the Pacific?
Yeah, you know, what is likely to happen is the opposition to the TPP in the United States is really like a trade union issue. It's the allegations are that it has led to a loss of jobs. So the trade deficit by itself has not been such a major concern, though it is a concern, and because it is interpreted in overly simplistic ways by candidate Trump. But the real impact on the loss of jobs, that is something that has been a major concern for the Democratic Party as well. And Hillary Clinton has also now opposed the TPP, even though as Secretary of State, she was its greatest proponent. I think we can expect that the TPP will be shelved for a while. But you know, there are real reasons for the Americans who are trying to set the rules for global trade. And President Obama has frequently said that unless they have the TPP, China will be able to dominate and set the rules for trade, particularly in the Asia Pacific. And China is, you know, it is now the biggest trading power in the world, and it would be very difficult to try and contain it or exclude it from trade, because we also must understand that a lot of trade continue to take place whether or not there are these mega trade agreements. But I see the feeling is that the TPP will resurrect after a couple of years, regardless of who is the president, for various reasons. You know, Japan, Abe in Japan has taken a lot of political hits, but managed to get agreement to the TPP and agreed to changes on agricultural routes, which has always been a big concern for the Japanese. Australia and South Korea really want the TPP. You know, other countries like Vietnam, etc., it is no longer only a trade agreement. It is seen also as a way of being in an association which will give some strategic protection, exactly as the European Union functions in the Western world, where even though it is an economic union, it affords two countries that want to join, that are new members, a sense also of security, not just economic. But you know, there are what is likely to happen is that it will come back with some tinkering on the labor standards, which already are very high, in order to cater to trade union pressures in the United States. I think in 2 or 3 years, we are likely to see it back in play.
As you rightfully mentioned, this is not, the TPP has expanded, and it's not only viewed as a way of containing China. But aside from the economic front, it's also important to remember that there's that very well-known expansionist threat which the United States sees in China with regards to its activities in the South China Sea. The Permanent Court of Arbitration gave their judgment on the South China Sea last month, with Beijing quickly dismissing the verdict and getting the rest of the ASEAN bloc to dismiss it as well in some way. With a new U.S. president coming in, what is the U.S. going to have to do to preserve geostrategic relevance in this region?
You know, one of the things we should keep in mind is that Chinese activities and aggressive postures in the South China Sea and towards claimants other than itself to many of those islands and atolls and rocks is something that the U.S. has taken note of much earlier. Years ago, it began to talk about the pivot to Asia. And in the context of that policy, it has already taken a lot of action, and it has also acted subsequent to the judgment given by the International Tribunal as well. So, you know, the United States has increased its own ship visits in the area to demonstrate the importance it attaches to freedom of navigation. It has reiterated that its commitment to the defense of Japan, including on the Senkaku Islands, which are disputed between China and Japan. It has deployed the missile system THAAD in South Korea. It has lifted a ban on weapons exports to Vietnam. The Americans have returned to bases in the Philippines. Marines have been deployed already in Australia. So the United States took some preemptive actions against China in the South China Sea and has stepped up the rhetoric post the judgment given by the International Tribunal. But most importantly, from our point of view, it has also stepped up its cooperation with India. And this was encapsulated in the joint vision statement that Obama and Modi had issued when he was in India as our guest at the Republic Day. You can see that within the joint vision statement and the developing Indo-US relationship, there is more and there is visible cooperation on terrorism. But there are other areas in the relationship which would need to be developed. But do we look at a forthcoming conflict in the South China Sea? It does not appear so. I think that the United States will continue with its naval ships and its going into the waters that are disputed. It will continue with its rhetoric. And the Chinese will continue to expand the military facilities like airstrips that they are building on those islands. And most intriguingly, there has just been some news reports that China is building both offshore nuclear energy plants as well as energy exploration oil rigs which move in and out of this region. And that will be an upping the ante in terms of what the countries in the region who have concerns regarding their own nuclear and but who would not want to see a Chinese plant coming towards themselves. And of course, the floating oil exploration rigs are already a matter of dispute between Vietnam and China. In an area where India has been given the rights for oil exploration. So I think to sum it up, the Americans have taken some preemptive action in their under the pivot to Asia policy, and they will now likely continue to show and maybe increase the number of visits that they will be making in the region. Some of this will get discussed next month at the G20 summit, and we will get more indications of American policy in the region over that.
Right. Lastly, just to wrap this up a bit. You mentioned that the joint vision statement that President Obama made when he had come down for Republic Day, but is there anything that that the Indian government can do to start to take the initiative in moving this relation forward, with a new US president coming in November, and this situation definitely, you know, being one of the more active regions of dispute, it would be prudent, right, for India to take the initiative.
Absolutely, India should take the initiative in its own interest. After all, we have the longest disputed border with China. There has been no progress on that, even though fortunately both sides, China and India, have worked to keep that border peaceful, but without addressing the demarcation or the differences. At some point, India and China must have a clearly demarcated border. But that is not the only reason. After all, China has vastly expanded its presence in India's neighbors in South Asia. And more concern now is the growing Chinese presence in the Indian Ocean and its efforts to build ports, which at some later stage will provide it with some kind of support facilities, if not naval bases, but certainly, what are the replenishment facilities will be available to China, not just in Pakistan, which will certainly provide base facilities and has said so, but also in Sri Lanka, possibly in Bangladesh later on, possibly in the Maldives at some stage. So India has real concern. There are a number of things that India can do. One is, of course, to continue to strengthen the framework of its relationship with the United States. I understand that the Lemova has been signed from the American side preceding the John Kerry visit to India, and that it will be signed by the Indians as well. That's one kind of beginning. There should be even more cooperation on an end to terrorism, which brings everybody to the relationship that the United States has with Pakistan and the position it takes on the Pak-China nexus, which works against Indian interests. But there should be a lot more pressure on Pakistan, and there has been. The United States has started to withhold aid to Pakistan, especially military aid, which Pakistan was supposed to use to work against terrorism. So those kinds of things India needs to be much more vocal and visible about. At the same time, at another level, what India could do is to suggest to the Americans some of the public view issues. For instance, it could advise the United States to stop posturing on human rights issues with countries in the region, considering that China is the worst offender and other countries are all trying to come together to be able to deal with China on a more equal basis. So to continually critique Vietnam or the Philippines or other countries on these issues is not helpful in enabling them to work with the United States on security issues. Another thing that India should perhaps be more vocal about is the importance of the mending US-Russian ties. Russia and China have recently held a joint naval exercise in the waters in the South China Sea. This should be an alarm signal to the United States, and the US, by improving its relationship with Russia, could help Russia and Japan to finally put an end to their still open question on the Second World War. They have not signed a treaty concluding those hostilities between them. If the United States were to apologize to Japan over Hiroshima and Nagasaki, that might make it easier for Japan to apologize to both China and South Korea, but it would have the important impact of enabling Japan and South Korea to work together in a balance to the enormous power of China. These are all important issues from the Indian point of view, and these are areas in which we could, you know, work with the United States. In the meanwhile, of course, we must continue to focus on the U.S., Japan, Australia, India Quad, which have held naval exercises. We need to demand that cooperation between India and the United States not be focused only on the Pacific side, but also to the west of India. Therefore, a greater role for India in all the confabulations over the resolution of Afghanistan, where India is a big contributor in the rehabilitation and reconstruction of that country. But in the end, it is a strengthening of dialogue, strategic dialogue, and defense dialogue with the United States, which will help India as well to be a bigger player in this region.
All right, that's all the time that we have for today. But thank you so much, Neelam, for joining us. And we look forward to speaking to you again next week on the next topic in our U.S. election mini-series.
Thank you.